I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Live exclusively for WCPT in Chicago, standing up and speaking out, here's Hal Sparks.
Good morning and happy Saturday, the final Saturday of the Trump administration. Thanks, Johnny. It's one of those things where you would kind of expect like a cheering sound effect or something like that. But in reality, I think that's where we all are. We're just like, come on. Four
He's
more days of this.
Do so much in these last few days. He doubled down
on doubling down. A lot of people are concerned about, you know, what if he gets his finger on the button? What is he going to trigger a war? Will he try to start that? Obviously, we have bigger fish to fry. He brought in the MyPillow guy right into the Oval Office again and gave Toby Keith the Medal of Freedom. I guess, and with no press present, and thank you, Hal Vickery, for the super chat for Trump's moving expenses.
He's always got a good memo on his donations.
Yes, he does, indeed. So Toby Keith is... Can you imagine getting, the Presidential Medal of Freedom from this guy, right, from Trump himself, after what happened on the 6th?
Right.
So what is your definition now of what the Congressional Medal of Freedom... I mean, he gave it to Jim Jordan for basically the same thing. Essentially helping him attack the country, being a sycophant, a subservient member of Congress who could run interference for him. It is brutal how, like, where do you put that on your mantle? What does that even stand for at this point, right?
It's something that should just end up like in the Guinness Book of Records, you know, the most worthless Medal of Honor.
Medal of Freedom, totally. I have to say, I thought that Belichick turning it down was extraordinary. Bob Belichick, basically, there was on the one front, he's like, I'm just a football coach. He's giving it to me because I was a supporter. No. Is essentially what his reasoning was. Honest to God, I think he deserves one now. I think that in and of itself, having the decency, like, talk about showing yourself above and beyond the world of coaching. Now, granted, as a Trump supporter, he's obviously, you know, got a screw loose in his political arena somehow. So, bless his heart, hopefully he comes to the sun. And maybe he has. Maybe the 6th was the wake-up call that is being alleged in the news. Because... we have a memory hole in this country, and we used to have effectively a memory window in the news cycle that was approximately 6 weeks long. That if you could ride something out for 6 weeks and miss it, and thank you for the super chats, guys. I just saw two more go by. Thank you, Cammy, and thank you, there it is. Thank you, Joyce. If you could get through it, if you could fake your way through it or try to distract people or pretend you didn't know what they were talking about, and you could plausibly manage that for 6 weeks, a month and a half, basically, you could get through almost any news story, even in the 80s and 90s, unless it was Iran-Contra and there was a full-on investigation or, you know, something along the lines of, you know, a major... year-long, like, OJ trial thing. If it was just a social mistake or those kind of things, it would last about a month and a half. Then we got down to what I really believe was the 21-day cycle. It was a 21-day cycle where it was essentially cut. It cut that in half. That 3 weeks... You know, and you were done. If you could just sucker it out for 3 weeks, no matter what the news was, then to some degree, Me Too upended that a little bit. Me Too extended out the thing to 6 weeks, fluctuated out. Some people could fight back against it for 6 weeks, they could manage, right? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, everywhere else, it was shortening and shortening. Right now, the Republican Party and the Jim Jordans of the world and Fox News and certainly Newsmax and OAN are trying to shorten the news cycle on what happened on the 6th to 5 days. That's how long it took them to pretend that it, I mean, it was no, I mean, it was, remember that long time, remember that? Remember when that happened? Remember when the 6th happened a long time ago? It was probably somebody else. Yeah. Who is, do you even really know what happened? Do it, does anyone really know? So I have news for them. That's not going to happen. One of the other effects of having a sensible gentleman like Joe Biden as president and a heightened sense of normalcy going on in the White House, where we are definitely, we will have news out of the White House, like how well the holes that are being patched in the White House walls, to how well the vaccine rollout can be fixed and restarted, the, you know, the economic stimulus package and some sort of, you know, back and forth, normal order of business stuff will definitely make the news. But because of that gap left, the Trump hole, effectively,
yeah,
the ongoing rollout of news around what occurred on the 6th is in and of itself going to extend the news cycle back to an almost 90s level. This is going Trump's post-presidency and the stories about who was involved on the 6th, what they knew and when, if there was anybody in the House that was contacting these folks, whether or not they're going to face criminal charges, much less expulsion. From expulsion from the House, those kind of things, that's going to be going on for a while. And I'm for it. I'm here for the news cycle lasting that long. Now, some of the folks that listen to my daily stream, and bless your hearts and thank you guys for joining us even on the Saturday. You know, it's almost like you need a break from all this kind of stuff. And we do our semi week in review. They have known that we've looked at some of the people who were around the president, the Paula Whites of the world, you know, who are like praying for justice in Africa right now, that woman, and the Kirk Camerons of the world who are coming out and having maskless events to celebrate Christmas, because quite frankly, they're just too many old people in their church, apparently, to the edges of the internet that continue to support him. The OAN hosts who have the really crap time slots, Mark Levin, who is the Fox equivalent of that OAN host that has a crap time slot. All these maniacs are still carrying water for Trump and presenting this idea that he's still, if not going to be president, is the titular head of the Republican Party now. And they've just got to deal with it. He is the head of the Republican Party. And even this week, I heard a walk back of that very statement to he's the head of the MAGA wing of the Republican Party. They're even aware that it's shrinking, that his influence, and I'm gonna, you know, I'm becoming sort of famous for some of my predictions now, so I'm feeling kind of, you know, where I can get out over my skis. And I'm here to tell you the influence politically of Donald John Trump is going to hit a cliff in the next 3 weeks. After he's done in office and there's a little bit of like, what's he doing post-presidency? And somebody, you know, interviews him on a golf course after he finally has the guts to come out and talk about something. And he says something incendiary and stupid, like he said when he was president. But then, you know, his own Secret Service are like, yeah, you can't say that. That's against that's a threat against the presidency. You know, those kind of things. That he is going to, it's going to drop off swiftly. First of all, the Republican Party can't wait to broom him and pretend they never knew him. And a big part of people are jockeying to gain control of that MAGA crowd that's slipping through his hands, that populist thing. And you even have this week that Breitbart was having a Slack conversation amongst all their editors and reporters. And there was a huge internal editorial mutiny about Trump and how they were sick of following him, where one editor at Breitbart literally typed in the words, destroy Trump. Now, on the one hand, do they really want to destroy Trump? No. But is it a protection racket for themselves? Can they, by destroying Trump and jumping on him with both feet, can they reclaim that populist group and go, you know what, it wasn't us. It wasn't our dumb ideas. It wasn't our idea of how government should be run. It was that one dude. We made the mistake of trusting him with the precious. He's not the precious himself. And we can all just pretend we didn't think he was the precious the whole time, right? This, the number of people who are turning in that regard is stunning. And a lot of it has to do with, quite frankly, them pretending they didn't, the damage control of pretending that they did not support him. That they're going to try and shorten that news cycle and make their support of him invisible as quickly as possible. And I'm sorry to disappoint them, but it is not going to work. Not just because people like me and others are going to constantly remind them whenever they try to pop their head up and start talking about, well, the deficit, you know, that kind of stuff. But also because people that are aligned with them are continuing the fight into lunacy, and it is spiraling down into something even more dangerous than the rhetoric and stuff we saw leading up to the 6th. And they are still in that sidecar. They're still in that Breitbart sidecar. They're still, you know, emotional invalids attached to the hip to Ben Shapiro and the like. And they try as they might, they want to shake it, they can't. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, a lot of news was made in the last 24 hours about Mike Lindell, the Mike Pillow guy. That's what we call him on the show, Mike Pillow. Mike Pillow going to the White House and having a bunch of notes that you could read, as you know, which are insane. And you can look at them on Twitter. I posted them myself and we'll talk about them. But you don't even need that, because Mike Lindell just posted his manifesto online like he's the new, you know, pillow bomber. And it's there in stark relief. You can see it. And this man walked that into the White House yesterday. We'll be back right after this. It's the House Parks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT Radio, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Patreon.com/HouseParks is a great way to support the show. We'll be back right after this.
Now let's get back with House Parks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide.
So welcome back to the show. There is no shortage of lunatics on the right currently. They are flush with them. We've got a couple of our own, I'm sure. And, you know, there is whatever you believe in your life, no matter how good or magnanimous you are with your beliefs and how, you know, supportive and universal you are, there's a lunatic that can take your belief system and turn it into, you know, Charles Manson's Helter Skelter. You know what I mean? You can, as the Beatles, you can turn out a really cool record, and there's some lunatic who will, you know, crowbar it into his race war scheme, right? We know this. We know that, you know, the Bible can be used for the best good and the worst evil. You know, this is not any surprise to anyone. So no one's free of having people who try to barnacle their way on. The way you can tell whether or not the philosophy itself is at fault is how welcome they are. You know, Jim Jones and David Koresh and those crowd, they weren't welcome into the normal world of Christianity. You know what I mean? Like, that's not any time past the Spanish Inquisition anyways. So that's an indicative of the functionality of your philosophy and whatnot. Mike Lindell not only was one of the main financiers of the Stop the Steal, along with Ali Alexander and some of these other lunatics, and Ginny Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife, who allegedly paid for 8 buses out of her own pocket of people showing up at the, you know, but it was all Antifa, I'm sure, showing up at the rally to Stop the Steal, which led into the march to Stop the Steal, which, by the way, they didn't have a permit for.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yes. One of the reasons why there was no guard was because the talk of the march was still in the zone of, you know, basic, you know, like maybe they'll march. We don't know. But it wasn't a we're having a march today. This is the route we've, you know, we've done all the normal aspects of a protest, any of that stuff. And it was the president's march and even said it. We're going to go down. I guess they thought that was that's enough. That's the what more permit do you need than the president of the United States saying he's going to lead you down that road, right? That he's going to take you there. So there's been a lot of this, you know, these folks kind of but we will find a lot of information about how, on the one hand, slapdash all this crap was, and on the other hand, how it was intentionally, you know, they were hoping for this outcome.
Oh yeah, the data that they mined from Parler, that Parler dump,
is yeah,
fascinating. Like they're talking about strategies on what to bring, how to bring it.
Right. Leave your guns this time. We'll bring them next time. We want to, you know, some of us want to breach and see how far we can get, or we can take weapons when we get there, you know, like, and they tried. I mean, even the super hunky cop that everybody's fawning over, who looks like one of the actors on SWAT, the guy with the spider web on his neck, he's the guy who was beaten with the American flag.
Oh, I think I heard a different interview with that guy who was tased multiple times.
Yes, he had a heart attack because of how many times he was tased. He's the guy who said to the people who saved him when he was like, "I got kids." He's like, "Thank you, but F you for being there."
Yeah,
you know that's which you know quote of 2020 of the Trump administration. You know what I mean? Like, oh, that's for all the people who are now leaving the sinking ship.
Yeah, right? That's what it took for your humanity to show up, to see that they're beating a person to death who is just doing his job that you claim to support.
Right. The back the blue nonsense, the thin blue
and
line.
Then
the
going back home while they simultaneously posting to social media so they have bragging rights, and then blaming it all on Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Or refuse to call it BLM.
Yeah.
They won't say Black Lives Matter.
That's right. So those people who are trying to, I mean, there's a difference. There's a group like you're talking about who are just trying to hide the fact that they were there. I don't know. And then the video comes out that they took themselves. That was part of the gift of Donald Trump in a lot of ways is the hubris that goes along with it.
Yeah.
Because if he wasn't such an egomaniac, and if his supporters didn't believe that the sun shined out of his rectum, and if they didn't believe that he was going to magically install himself as the God King of the Overlord, and that he and the land are one, like King Arthur, they wouldn't have filmed themselves like this. They wouldn't have crowbarred themselves into every possible security camera and everyone else's live feed, and they wouldn't have taken pictures of themselves in front of broken windows and you know, and garbage, and like amazing how much hubris played such a huge part. Well, Mike Lindell, who, you know, you and I were saying we kind of categorically put in this semi-harmless crowd of people.
Initially, right.
Mike Lindell has, and if you haven't seen it, you know, check your social media, went to see the president yesterday, was allowed to see him for about 15 minutes. Trump sent him up to talk to his lawyers. And then after he talked to his lawyers, he wasn't allowed to see the president again. Now, a lot has been made about him not being able to see the president again after he saw the counsel. Okay. That doesn't mean the president didn't want to see him again. There's all kinds of stuff that happens in a presidential, you know, in the reality of Trump still being president, that you don't get to go back in through the room, and you can't go back through because you just came back through unless he specifically asks for you. So this, like, it's not like Trump went, get rid of him. That's not what happened at all. As a matter of fact, Lindell arguably has more cash than Trump does because he's a functioning businessman with a, you know, with dozens upon, I mean, he's basically the advertising arm. He and lubricated catheters are what keeping Fox News afloat. Sorry about that image.
You were.
So, yeah. So, Mike Lindell walks out with his notes, and it's, you know, declare martial law and put Mike Flynn in charge of this thing and put Kash Patel in charge of the, you know, acting in charge of the CIA. And then you can sign the Insurrection Act and like all, I mean, next level, not like I believe the Lord wants you to be president stuff, but here's how you can maintain power at the barrel of a gun, right, with the barrel of a gun. Like that's what, you know, that's what he's asking. That's what he showed up with a plan to do. And everyone, you know, can see from the edges of his notes, that's what he came there to discuss. Well, you don't even need to look at the edges of his notes to see that's what he was there to discuss, because Mike Lindell on his Twitter feed just posted his manifesto. Yeah, the Mike Pillow guy has a manifesto about how the president can seize power. And it is titled Reclaiming a Superpower, Americans Prepare for War. Now, there's a horror that kind of automatically goes, you know, with even recognizing this man speaks in these terms after the 6th. You know what I mean? There's something to this where this is to even use this kind of language this soon after the 6th is next level disgusting, right?
That's the worst.
But as you know, as you do, I actually read the thing. You're welcome. And I'm sorry. And you don't have to go very far into it where he goes into a he has a section. It's called Reclaiming a Superpower, Americans Prepare for War. The first section is called Tipping Point. This is what's going to this is turning. This is, you know, the whole thing. We were playing nice, but that's it. There has been a tipping point. He gives a snapshot of his, you know, ballots demanding investigation. This is all stuff we've seen through Rudy Giuliani and stuff. He goes through the state of affairs and highlights the election system failed, the election audits failed, the judiciary failed, government failed, media failed, you know, and failed at what? Keeping Trump in power even though he lost. That's unfortunately the missing circuit in Mike Pillow's head. But the scary part comes on page 2 when Mike Pillow writes, what we know, highlights. POTUS is virtually alone in the White House. I need some, do we have a piano? Is there, do I have any sad music? I got to find that somewhere. Doom, 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 doom. Literally, POTUS is virtually alone inside the White House. No support, section 1. With the exception of a few souls, POTUS is surrounded by globalists, which we, of course, know is code for Jews, political opportunists who do not support him, or the long-term interests of the Republic. They, like the swamp they deceitfully claim to drain, are interested only in their next D.C. gig. Well, for the record, all the people who are leaving right now can't get a job. The only people who are left, the few souls that are around him, are the people who are so dug in on Trump that they can't get a job anywhere else. Active obstruction is the second segment. Trump's own chief of staff and White House counsel have actively thwarted numerous attempts to reach the president and actively campaign against all efforts to secure election evidence. That's him. That means they won't, you know, Mark Meadows doesn't want Mike Lindell talking to him. The third one is the scary one, because this is when you realize something about this. It's chaos reigns. Is the name of this section. Tens of millions of people cling to the belief that POTUS has a magic plan he is waiting to unveil. He's talking about the QAnon people right here. While there is a chance he will reveal something on the 6th, the reality is much darker. This document, America Prepares for War, was written and disseminated by Mike Lindell before the 6th. Leading up to the 6th, Mike Lindell, the My Pillow guy, released a document calling Reclaiming a Superpower, Americans Prepare for War. This is not the first time, we're not the first people to see it. This was sent out on Parler when it still existed. This was sent out as, you know, as a rallying cry document. POTUS is surrounded by impotent and self-interested staff. I don't know. He re-hits that point from the one before. He has been betrayed by the very people surrounding him, and he is nearly alone in his war against evil. Every patriot needs to grasp how serious this is. Widespread public support, and we got to take a break. But outside on the outside, the White House picture is very different. President Trump has the devoted support of 80 plus million people. For every coup plotter, there are 1,000 patriotic Americans who will not let this nation be stolen.
I don't get it.
I mean, it is. This guy paid for the buses. Everybody who was on those buses got a copy of this handed out to them, amongst other stuff. There were talking points put out. These are the talking points you heard from a lot of these folks because Mike Lindell gave them to them. That level of, you have to understand the reach that this guy is spending. He and the Overstock guy are spending millions of dollars disseminating documents like this to the kind of people who nearly beat a cop to death with a flagpole and killed another in the Capitol a week ago last Wednesday. By the way, we got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. It's the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide on WCPD Radio. Next hour, the Midas Touch guys are going to be with us. Do you remember who the Overstock guy, you know, remember why he lost his job? Do you know how the CEO lost his job, Johnny?
No, I don't remember that.
He slept with Maria. He slept with Maria Butina.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be back right after this. Okay. Okay.
This is Doris Davenport, host of the Doris Davenport Show, all local, all the time. Now let's get back to Hal Sparks' radio program, Mega Worldwide.
I have to say, there were a lot of, I think, you know how every New Year's people do a look back at the year? And honest to God, this year I had no interest in looking back at 2020. Like, goodbye. At some point, you know, tragedy plus time equals comedy. We will have a chance to look back at some of the sillier parts of this.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit, going to be mad.
Yeah, right. But not right now. yeah, so this is, I think, the funniest title you can see is Overstock CEO resigns after blaming deep state for romance with Russian agent. I mean, that the Vanity Fair article on the Overstock CEO, who is literally, you know, it's just one of those situations where I think it's clear to a lot of people, or appears to a lot of people, that this guy enjoyed the good life of being a super rich CEO, consumed a lot of substances. Some of those things have a kind of don't mix beer and liquor ever kind of zone, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that, this is from the Intelligencer, the Overstock CEO fell for an accused Russian spy. Accused? No, she went to jail for precisely that.
I like the quote in the Rolling Stone article where he says, there's not going to be any way to tell this, I told him, without explaining to readers you're a different sort of dude.
A different sort of dude. Oh, God. Yeah. Richard McNeil saying today is December 47th, 2020. I know. It just feels like it goes on and on. Oh, my gosh. And somebody's just sending me on Twitter that IKEA is having to post, we're aware that our New Haven, Connecticut store parking lot is being promoted as a meeting location for a MAGA event this Saturday.
What?
Probably because, you know, Swedes are mainly white. And so perhaps the ground around an IKEA, according to the Insurrection Act, is now
officially. You said master race. I'm listening.
Yeah, reverted back to a Swedish home territory, and therefore, if you believe your genes trace back to the Vikings, you can meet in the parking lot without any limitations. Whatever. There are a lot of dead enders in this. There are a lot of crazy people who are quite dangerous, who have nothing else. This is the big... I mean, this is why... One of the other reasons, besides, you know, the kindness of it, why you have things like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, jobs programs, retooling programs, programs for people to, you know, if their industry has been scuttled, they can go and, you know, learn a new trade for free because they can get a government grant for that. There's a reason why you do that beyond just it's the thing to do. And it goes back to the, you know, idle hands or the devil's workshop. If anything, we're looking at a lot of the unrest that we saw even around the George Floyd murder and the ensuing story around it and the other cases that were, you know, were addressed. The reason why there was more rioting and looting associated with those things, even though I do not believe they overlap, is that the opportunistic aspect of just nothing to do and a lot of rage to show overlapped with a situation in the streets that made it look like you could just look like that was your reasoning. You could give this as a, you know, an excuse. The nation is tearing itself apart. Therefore, I will take out my rage on this Starbucks that has a family of four living above it. And by setting it on fire, I nearly kill them. But it's really, it's not that I'm pro BLM or I'm part of Antifa. It's just I don't care. And I'm angry and I have some place to show it. That idle hands danger that exists there. And there's a big part of, you know, rural blue collar America. That's the, you know, the economic anxiety argument that you've heard a lot, which I think is garbage for everybody who was at the Capitol, by the way, because they had the means and wherewithal to travel all the way across the country. And most of them were delivered there by rich people, by CEOs. They were given plane tickets. They didn't walk across the country in a show of solidarity with Donald Trump and like, we're starting today, the day of the election. If we start walking now and we just camp a few nights or drive until we run out of gas, we're going to Walking Dead our way all the way to the, you know, the Capitol. We'll be there on the 6th to stand with our, none of it. They all got a free plane ticket, a free hotel room, a free bus ride. And all they had to do was go down there, stand in the crowd and fill it out. And if a few of them felt like murdering a public official that they didn't vote for, or even one that they did, it's, I mean, they don't even have to go very far. Most of their trip was paid for. They got snack baskets on the buses. This, Brendan in our chat saying Twitter has reset the POTUS account to zero for the new administration. I don't think there's any problem with that. And I think a lot of by the end of the Trump administration, anybody who was there right up to the time that he was cut off was either journalists who have to keep track of what he's saying and doing, and sycophants who are not interested in the function of government. So they wouldn't refollow the POTUS account under Biden because it will be filled with normalcy, which is not what interests them in any way. And I guess who else? Bots. You know, like to fill out his numbers. I'm sure Trump will come on and go, I had a lot more followers at some point. He'll say that than Biden did or whatever. And you're like, yeah, because fictional television shows get better ratings than the news. Always, in every sense. There's, you know, unless there's some sort of like a bombing or a major trial like OJ, fiction always wins. It's way more interesting. Why do you think the QAnon thing took off as well as it did? It had all the makings of a mystery you could help solve. Yeah. You were a part of something. It was nonsense. You could make up increasingly outlandish details about it. So it got even more. Oh, my God, it's that big. It's that big. It's that big, you know. And it hooked some big fish. Roseanne Barr is all in.
Babies. I knew right. it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's been. He's got an ankle. They can't show his feet. You know, when he hosts SNL, because he's got an ankle. Yeah, he got an ankle monitor on. Because that's how. That's how, the Trump would stop the a giant pedivore ring with ankle monitors. What? Like, I'm sorry, Guantanamo was full. We got to do something. Like, oh God, the level of craziness in it was intoxicating for a bunch of people. And there are a lot of people who are predisposed to being sucked into that kind of stuff. And they were baited into it for quite a long time. Let's not pretend that Q is the first dip in to the conspiracy whirlpool and it being fomented by Russian troll farms and making them give it more weight than it has. Because one of the dangers with the, you know, the would-be Mike Pillows of the world is that when you have a story like this, when you have, you know, somebody making up these details, like in creating this Q account or whatever, is that it usually will languish in nowhere, because there won't be enough lunatics that can function in front of a computer who can further the message and carry it out, right? These people usually have crayons between their toes and a limited number of human visitors. So at a certain point, it just dies on the vine. And that's what the Russians especially recognized about the internet a long time ago, and to some degree the Chinese, and I suppose the North Koreans and Iranians, but they're way lower on the rung in this. But anybody who also wants to mess with productivity in the United States could practice this going forward if people don't harden themselves against this kind of lunacy. And so when do you remember Zeitgeist, Johnny? Did you ever watch Zeitgeist?
I'm familiar with the term.
Well, Zeitgeist was is of course the general thought, you know, is what the Zeitgeist is. It's into the normal conversation. It gets its way in. Zeitgeist was a movie that was made, a documentary that was put on that, you know, traces the myth of Mises to Moses to Jesus from Ra, and that basically all the religious stuff were used to hearing about Jesus goes back to, you know, five religions ago, and they just turn it around and it's really just repackaged, right? And that was the kind of general beginning of the story. It kind of leads you in. The first part of it was about this kind of history stuff, almost like Ancient Aliens-esque stuff. And it's kind of fascinating if you look at the overlapping storylines, and people get attracted to that kind of stuff. Part two was how the Fed was created illegally and it needs to be destroyed. The bait was Ancient Aliens and religion is responsible for wars. And the hook that catches you is, henceforth, cogito ergo sum, we must dispose of the Fed because it is this giant monstrosity. That's where it led you. That worked so well, and it was boosted so much by these bot accounts up into they popped the algorithm on YouTube for the first time with Zeitgeist and those kind of things. And Alex Jones kind of dovetailed his way behind that, and that's what carried them into the front of the line. And what we saw, the manipulation of the algorithm and the benefit of the algorithm on things like YouTube as they emerged, everybody got a hold on that. How do you do it? The Russians will even, had a strategy. We got to take a break. During our last two election cycles, where whenever a hashtag would start about a Democratic politician or idea or something against Trump, they would produce dozens that were mildly misspelled and fill them up. So people would click on those or start to type them, assume it would be correct, and hit return at the end of their tweet, trying to add it to the line of all the people doing the hashtag, and it would divert it off into a misspelled version of it. And suddenly you're like, I don't know why people don't share my idea. Why are my posts not getting as much? I must be wrong, is the idea that you eventually come to that conclusion. The manipulation of the algorithm is the bread and butter of the troll farms and the manipulators out there. So we owe it to ourselves to enter into 2021 and indeed the rest of our digital future as we interact with each other with a heightened awareness of those possibilities and not kid ourselves that somebody can make money off of it even if they don't mean to bring down the entire democratic world. And you should just be aware. We'll be back right after this. It's the House Parks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide. We'll be taking some calls, but in the next hour, we're going to have the Midas Touch guys to talk about the races that are coming, because 2022's congressional races are going to be interesting. We'll be back.
This is Damian Perdue of Think Theory Radio, Saturdays at 6 p.m. You're listening to Hal Sparks' radio program, Mega Worldwide.
You know, during the break, I was showing something else to Johnny in the document that Mike Pillow just put out. That on the top of page 4, this, understand, this is a millionaire, a multi-millionaire, who is and has been a regular guest on Fox News, is a large part of their ad campaign, is almost single-handedly financing OAN with his ads. OAN and Right Side Broadcasting run on MyPillow ads.
Yeah.
He has, by the way, he's recognized that if every one of these QA morons that's out there buys one of his pillows, he's set. So beyond all this being lunacy, this could be the most crass commercial endeavor in the history of economics. Literally, how do I tie insanity to my product? Sell to the insanity. Like this, that's amazing. It's the opposite of Susan Powder. But on top of page 4 of his Reclaiming a Superpower, America Prepares for War document that he released, that everybody on all the buses that Mike Lindell paid for leading up to the 5th got a copy of. I can't stress that enough. The top of the page says Destroying Evidence. That's the name of this category. AT&T's Nashville facility was attacked by a weapon, most likely to destroy evidence and data which would reveal election fraud in Georgia. This is the man who blew himself up because he thought 5G was going to destroy the world. And so he sacrificed himself and blew up his RV and played. Was it the Dolly version of the Patsy Cline song, or was it the live version of the actual Patsy Cline version of Downtown, and warned everybody to get away before he blew the place? By the way, if go back to 9/11 and all the accusations about whether that was an airplane or a missile, does the deep state clear the street before they blow up an area? What? Why all of a sudden are they interested in the lives of the people around there? Why wouldn't they want to make him look even more violent? If they're trying to make a case about the lunatics on the right that are doing all this stuff and they've created this patsy, why not let people die in the explosion? Do they care? Is it because it's Nashville and not D.C.? Is that the argument we're hearing? Okay. But in that section, Destroying Evidence, where he claims that AT&T's Nashville facility was attacked by a weapon most likely to destroy evidence and data which would reveal election fraud in Georgia, in all caps following that sentence, he has, or not all caps, sorry, in bold, the official narrative perpetrated by the mainstream media is being rigidly enforced by every powerful institution in the country. Did it ever occur to them to simply ask, when is the last time the FBI solved any crime in 48 hours?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I will tell you that one of the reasons it's rare is because the FBI is usually called in after the local law enforcement, state law enforcement, and everyone else involved has failed to be able to find a link, or when it spreads over multiple states, in which case it takes longer to build a case and present a federal case. See how that works? Solving it, whatever he means by solving it there. What do you mean? Catch the guy? That guy blew himself up. this, I mean, was it Petula Clark? It was Patsy Cline's version of Petula Clark's song. That's what it was. Okay. Now, thank you. Yes. And that they used mail-in ballot as justification. And again, this is not something that I just found on the dark web. Okay. Mike Lindell just tweeted this. He didn't put any text on the tweet. He just tweeted the link.
I just saw a reply from Rex Chapman, who has a pretty fun, he's a former NBA guy. And he tweeted, right. How long does the MyPillow guy get to keep openly plotting a coup before he gets arrested, asking right. for a country?
Yeah. That in and of itself is just, it's stunning. This is an, you know, a clear act of violence. Like and again, he called for this. He actively called for this pre, you know, because like I said, I thought the opening line of it was in bad taste after the 6th. But we now know that this document, this 15-page pile of lunacy, was put out right before the 6th. On page 9 of Mike Lindell's manifesto, our window to solve this is closing. This is before the attacks on the 6th. Much time has been wasted by bad and incompetent actors seeking to run out the clock. I feel seen. Currently, Senator Cruz, Texas, has proposed we conduct a 10-day audit of elections. This is not enough time to conduct an election audit. Had this been done a month ago, it might have been able to reveal the will of the voters. Now it will only clog the system and appease people who don't understand how the process works. Efforts for transparency will be thwarted at every stage. Listen to that. Efforts for transparency will be thwarted at every stage. You cannot even trust if Ted Cruz and the rest of these maniacs had managed to stop the count on behalf of the president,
yep.
and have a 10-day audit, then the argument from Mike Lindell is that they'd still need to storm the Capitol because it will not be enough. This will just be a show. The time for auditing the 2020 presidential election has passed. That's bold. Our remaining options. A, contingent election for U.S. president. Mike Lindell wants to, I guess, finance a second presidency. B, accept obvious corruption in United States government. Well, all right, let's talk about that for a second. Like, that's one of those, like, he just put that in for sarcasm. C, war. That's it.
Yeah, there you go.
Either we have another election and just call Trump the president, or we declare war. It's that or accept obvious corruption. And then he ends that page with a quote from Thomas Jefferson. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right and their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is a call at 1776. And by the way, he's talking about a king. We were separating ourselves as a democracy from a monarch.
Yep.
And what this led to was a situation where George Washington refused to continue to serve. He did not keep. They were going to basically, like, you want to be king now? No. We have elections. He left. That's one of the things that made George Washington an extraordinary man. Think about in the history of human endeavors, in the hierarchy of power throughout history, especially the known written history, and understand that George Washington was one of the first guys to go, P, peace out. You guys need to pick somebody else because somebody else needs to represent us. And we got to change leaders all the time so that nobody, no one man runs everything. That, I mean, that's amazing right now. Trump isn't even willing to do that. Much less, you know, the fact that they're calling for him not to. But George Washington, in a time when it was expected, said, I'm not going to do it. It's not done. Worldwide, nobody does that. But I'm going to. That's that reason enough for him to have a his, you know, a monument in D.C. Reason enough to name the city after him. Seriously, because in it could have gone very differently. If someone of the ilk of Donald John Trump had been standing there when this was all done, well, he'd have been a British soldier. It wouldn't have mattered, and he would have been the he would have couldn't have shot straight. It would have been a mess.
To ask you a question. I'll save it till after the news.
Yeah. Okay. The Midas Touch guys are waiting in the wings. We're going to bring them on. And yeah. And then we'll be back right after this. House Parks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT Radio, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Now with 100% more Johnny Million at Johnny Million One until he's kicked off Twitter for fomenting a rebellion. We'll be back.
I've had people walk out of me before, but not when I was being so charming.
Video streaming at HowSparks.com.
I don't care for you or for the putrid sludge you're troweling out.
Damn, pus-faced little pimp stick.
True progressive talk.
Might be a good time for you guys to give up.
Welcome back to the show. You know, we don't just discuss MyPillow's insurrection, the pillow fight to retake America. Oh, no, we sometimes have guests worthy of the program. The guys from Midas Touch are joining us right now. Welcome, Jordy and Brett and Ben. Thank you guys for being with us. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having
thank
us.
So much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. So MidasTouch.com, for everybody who doesn't know, and a lot of us know Midas Touch as being one of the primary people who kind of produce these, what I would almost call like hypocrisy porn, you know, where you take what people are saying now and what they said before and you put it right together and you're like, oh, stark relief. Before we dive into the multiple levels of it over the last week and some of the, and your guys' newest videos and what you've released and what you're working on. You know, let everybody know what the impetus was to do this. And then we'll jump straight in. Cause I want to catch people up in case you guys don't know, you know, people who are listening don't know MidasTouch.com, MeidasTouch.com. Right.
Short of it is I'm the older brother. I'm a lawyer. I'm 35, been practicing since 2010, jury trials, depositions. Brett's a digital editor, Emmy award-winning. Jordy is an award-winning marketer. We were sitting home like everyone, either furloughed or our jobs were shut down. I couldn't do trials, nothing much going on other than seeing Donald Trump lie and give lies that kill as COVID reached our shores. We had the opportunity to fully take it in. I just think when you're in the rat race of work, you see it, but there's a way to kind of tune it out. Just seeing it that way, we were like, holy crap. Like I couldn't just sit on the couch in this apocalyptic time without doing something. We always wanted to work together on something, me and my brother. So we put our talents together. We put out the first video. It did 1 million views, put out a second video. It got over 1 million views. And before you know it, we became a political action committee in May. Since that time, our videos have been viewed over 600 million times on Twitter alone, over 1.5 million followers across platforms and socials. And we were heavily invested in Georgia, put close to $2 million there, focused on the ground game. And I would say if disinformation is the virus, Midas Touch was the medicine. And we came in and tried to use you know, deeply researched tactics on deplatforming, deprogramming, steeped in literature, but to come out with these very compelling videos that ultimately, I think, was a part of waking people up.
Yeah, great. And so I just retweeted, by the way, one of your most recent ones. It was funny because I went straight to the site to kind of like, since you guys are on, you know, tweet out what you had. And I had to scroll a bit before I could find one that I hadn't already retweeted in that regard.
Well, that's quite guys. A compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, right. And this, you know, I want to know about your guys' reaction to the sixth, where you guys were when you were watching it, because I know you guys knew going in, like a lot of people, that there was going to be, you know, that Josh Hawley was going to object, that Ted Cruz was going to object. There was all this news leading up to. We knew some of these people were going to mess around, and we also knew that Trump was going to have this rally. It was a tinderbox, but, you know, then it went in a direction, you know, over the top that I think, you know, enraged and frightened a lot of people. And I'm just curious about where you guys were. Were you guys in communication on that day, getting ready to go, we're going to definitely be doing a video about this and talking about his message? I'm curious. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the short answer is we were in like probably the same rooms that you're looking at us in and listening to us in right now.
Right.
Working on our videos. I mean, we don't really leave the house much due to COVID anymore. And so we're kind of locked in here. I, for a long time, had been predicting that there would be violence on this day. I was relieved when they had banned that Proud Boys leader, Enrique Torrio or whatever his name is, from DC. I thought that was a good first step, but I was surprised that there wasn't more action taken to secure the area, given all the discussions that were being had across Parler and Twitter and OAN and Newsmax and from the President of the United States himself. While I expected violence, I didn't quite expect people to actually go and storm the Capitol building and then get inside. I think that was the most shocking thing to me.
Right.
Because growing up, like, and when you, and Ben used to give tours at the Capitol, and, you know, I used to visit Ben in DC, and they would always say, you know, how it's the people's house and you could go right up to it, but they would be adamant about, but it's so protected. And look, there are snipers up top, and you know, there's top of the line security you don't even know about, and US intelligence is elite, and da 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 da. And then for just a group of people to just be able to run in and storm the place and take over. I mean, it was one of the most shocking
during the counting.
I've ever seen. During the counting,
during,
while there were members of Congress in there, including people who were next in line to succession for the presidency of the United States, and it's not a protected, a hard security area. I mean, that to me was mind-blowing. And I also was thinking, like, if you're one of America's worst enemies, this is perhaps the worst thing for them to see, that, oh, if you just get a, if you just get enough people, you could just take over the government.
Yeah, like, how is that not a successful dry run?
Yeah, it left us horrified. And I think for a while, we just had to kind of take it in and hope that everything was going to be okay. And, you know, we were looking to see what the Biden administration was doing. We were looking to see what the people, what the counting was going to be like, if they were going to come back, if they were going to go to a private room. And then you see the videos of the Republican Congress people refusing to wear masks in the secure room. And you see Lauren Boebert tweeting out Nancy Pelosi's location. And you're just like, what is going on? It was just it was just chaos, and it was hard to make sense of it. But we knew after that that we had to release content and videos to combat the inevitable lies and hold the people who spread the big lie accountable for inciting this insurrection.
Yeah. When you know, I think as we all watched it, we knew that it wouldn't take much, that you got to take some of these people's words seriously. And I'm curious, by the way, that was for those just listening on the radio, Ben spoke first, then that was Brett. Jordy's sitting over with you. And I feel like Jordy gets I don't know why I feel this way, but I feel like you're the one who has to, like, watch OAN and stuff like that just to dig up stuff. They force you to do it.
As the youngest brother, there's a lot of grunt work that I have to do. That does fall on the list.
Hey, Jay,
we need to watch 12 hours of OAN and let us know all the crazy stuff happening. All right, guys, I'm there.
I will say we ran an ad on Newsmax in the final weeks leading up to Georgia, and we didn't tell anybody until after it had already aired because we didn't want to kind of give the secret up and cue anybody in. And so we ran the ad of Lynn Wood basically telling people, telling Republicans
not to vote.
You know, the Republicans, you know, do not have your side, don't have their backs, don't vote for them in Georgia. And we ran it just, we flooded the airwaves on Newsmax with it. And it was pretty epic. So that weekend, we made Jordy watch OAN for about, we made him watch Newsmax for at least 48 hours straight.
Oh,
and he just kept coming back to us and saying, guys, you have no idea.
You don't. Right. Well, that's what I wanted to bring into this, Jordy, because there's the clips you see of Newsmax that are almost the most presentable parts of it. You know what I mean? It's like you'll see clips where people go, this is horrible what they're saying on Newsmax. But even that is the light version, right? Yeah. That's the prime time.
1,000%. It is all. Every clip is just worse after worse after worse thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's lie after lie. And it's scary when you realize just how many people are actually sitting home viewing this as if it's truth. And then you see how something like January 6th can happen so easily. And that's the scary thing.
And they dovetail it into prayer so often on Right Side, on OAN. So oftentimes on Newsmax, that it goes, okay, here's a bunch of lies about the material election and the genuine world that go beyond anything we can kind of argue, you know, masks will prevent COVID, get vaccinated, adult, normal human stuff. And then they end this, none of that's, all that's garbage. Now let's pray. As if prayer is somehow associated. Yeah.
Even the presentation is very much like those mega church preachers, you know,
very
like
CBN.
Even the way it comes on and the commercials, it will go from that into like the one commercial that's really like just ingrained in my mind. Every commercial break was James Earl Jones reads the Bible.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
which I want. Which I you know, that's definitely, I would, that's the only part that makes me feel relaxed. I think they put that in there just so people can take a breath. Like, okay, at least James Earl Jones is still reading the Bible. That would never happen.
They're preaching damnation. They're selling an apocalyptic view of the world. You know, that everything's about to end. The world's about to be destroyed. Only we have the answer. That's quote 101. But that's why we do what we do. As I said at the beginning, you know, we view ourselves
as deprogrammers.
Deprogramming, deplatforming. And look, we keep it fresh. We try to keep it funny. We try to keep it exciting to start that conversation of maybe having that person watching it go, wait a minute. That doesn't really make sense. And once I have them asking that question, then we've succeeded in, hopefully they'll start reading more of the literature and they could get out of that ecosystem and into one of truth.
That's awesome. We're talking to the Midas Touch guys, MidasTouch.com, and of course at Midas Touch on Twitter and all the places that we're still allowed to congregate because we don't foment revolution and tell people to drink.
And how we got
bleach.
The number 15 podcast right now of all.
I know. I was just going to say that. That just came up. Like I saw it. I was scrolling through your timeline, and there's a picture of Rachel, and I was like, oh, you're right up there with the podcast version of her show.
We're two ahead of Rachel, I'll note.
I know. There you go. So, MidasTouch.com. And, of course, their podcast is available everywhere. Podcasts are available. But then, you know, we'll talk about that when we come back. I want to talk a little bit about going forward because there's some ticks that are burrowed in on this dog that are going to be hard to extract. Trump's and I'm curious about your feeling about Trump's influence. I have my opinions about it after the election. I'm curious to share that with you. So everybody stick around. It's the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT Radio, Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM 820 on your dial. And of course, WCPT 820.com is the website for all your great progressive talkers. It's also the Hal Sparks Radio Podcast, Mega Worldwide. It's nowhere near the level these guys are at on the Sexy Liberal Network.
Please.
We'll be back right after this. We'll be right back.
This is Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide on Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT.
Indeed you are, and made even more powerful in its scope and reach because I have the Midas Touch guys on who have the number 12 podcast on Apple right now. Is it? Where are
you? Number 15. It's number 15, but after the show, I have a feeling we're going to skyrocket up to number 12.
That's right. You're going to get at least 1,000 more people, which is all you need in podcast world to make all the difference. I think a lot of us, I'm curious what you guys think. I'm not people who watch the show know my opinion about where Trump's going to be after this election. I'm curious to what you guys think will happen to his influence in the Republican Party and in politics after this is over.
I don't think I don't think it's a foregone conclusion what it is. If we're complacent and we start giving him the attention that he's this oddity and we view him like he's a zoo animal and just keep giving him press, he could regenerate. So we should be careful. But if the steps that are happening now, the deplatforming, mm-hmm. the isolation, the shaming for his overthrowing of attempting to overthrow a democracy and for 4 years having a quasi weird kind of cosplay dictatorship that he's had, I think that the law will indeed catch up to him. And I think that he's going to be increasingly isolated. I think there are going to be criminal charges brought against him. I think there are going to be state actions. I think more information is going to leak about all of the horrible things as former Trump officials try to rebrand themselves in their next act. And so I think he's going to be viewed as not just the worst president in history, but the worst person in history. And I'm not saying that hyperbole, but he's going to get increasingly kind of shamed and, you know, and he faces real criminal repercussions. So and I'm not saying that like he's going to get arrested. You know, he really is going to get arrested is my prediction.
Yeah. If E. Jean Carroll has anything to say about it, you know, first she'll win her defamation case against him because now he will have to actually show up for the deposition and there will be, you know, she'll have, this might be the first case where a post presidency, a regular citizen has the right to argue to get rid of executive privilege in a case where she was targeted as a citizen by the president of the United States. Just that alone is extraordinary on its legal reach because she, you know, he told Bill Barr to, you know, act as his personal attorney. And there's conversations between the two of them about shutting her down and making her not being able to, you know, fight her defamation case about her sexual assault case against him. And then charges. And then, you know, other people coming forward. I'm like, I think you're right about that part. I'm curious, Brett and Jordy, what your thoughts about his reach afterwards, too.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say never have we had an attorney general so clearly not work in the interests of the United States of America, but work in the interests of one man, the president of the United States. And Bill Barr leaving on December 25th or whenever he left, like in hindsight, I'm also curious, what did he know about what was to come? Why did he choose to leave at that time? Like, clearly he knew.
He knew all that, Brett. He knew the MyPillow guy was coming in. He knew the MyPillow guy's coming in with manifestos. And he's like, all right, I'll go up to a certain limit. Like, I'll
everything
do
everything except
stuff,
for overthrowing democracy. That's where he drew the line.
I'm pulling the power chute at insurrection because.
Right. Look,
these people, Brett, though, they know how to survive in this world. Bill Barr is evil, but smart. Trump is
but
evil,
functional.
But Trump isn't. You know, there's a reason why Trump went bankrupt so many times because he takes it to that level.
And he just kept lowering the bar about what he was willing to do to recover every single time.
And I'll say about Trump, Trump and Trumpism going forward. I think it's important. Deplatforming is important, but deprogramming, like Ben was hinting at, is even more important because if we could deprogram these cultists, right, that's going to be a huge step into making sure Trump's actual reach is lessened.
Mm-hmm.
One of the consistencies that we've heard in speaking with people from Homeland Security experts like Juliet Kayyem to Representative Ted Lieu, who we spoke with on our podcast a couple days ago, is that people who follow Trump follow him knowing or with the concept behind it that he's a winner. So we need to do everything that we can to shame him and show the world that he's a loser. And nothing is more important than, you know, first getting him out of office, which immediately makes him look like a loser. And I think you sort of see it when Parler was still up, RIP. You saw people starting to question a little bit. I don't understand. Q said the storm is coming. Q said that Trump is going to be president. I don't understand. Lynn Wood, are you gonna spill the beans or is this all a fraud? Like, what's going on, Trump? Yeah. And so I think once people start being confronted with the reality that they've been lied to, I think there will be a small amount of those people who can be susceptible to then being pulled back to reality. But I think there'll also be a percentage of those people who could be pulled even deeper into something even darker than they're in now. So I think we need to be vigilant and constantly.
There's varying levels of bottom in this situation, and a bunch of people. We had stories last year, and I'm sure you guys saw them, of people hitting bottom with their families, going, "I was stuck in the Q cult, and I got to get out." And last summer, there was a few stories of that starting to emerge. People who are like lonely. Had lost all their friends, their family wouldn't talk to them, and they were like, "I just bought all this stuff." You know, that there'll be some more of that, because the people who are almost like those people weren't quite ready to go there yet, or thought if they did, it ceded ground to Marxist, communists, you know, Chinese, you know, psychopaths that are going to run the country and all that.
You don't see a lot of family members defending the people who are at the Capitol, which I think shows you a bit of who these people are.
Turning them in. Families. I mean, one girl turned her whole family in.
Dwayne had a great tweet about that. I'm going to find it right now.
Find it.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are a lot of, you know, I feel like there are a lot of people who feel in some form or fashion as rejects from society or isolated from society. And I think that's a lot of the Trump administration, too. This is not your A team of political advisors.
No.
This is not even the B, the C, the D, the E. Or the F team. What does the tweet say? Probably just coincidence that everyone at the Trump riot had people in their personal lives who couldn't wait to turn them in.
Right.
That's the truth.
Just a coincidence.
The DOD, you know how Trump was funneling these loyalists in, you know, at the last minute into, you know, military positions. And there was a lot of concern about that. Because what difference does it make? Why would you change people out in the last couple of weeks? Bill Barr leaving and these guys going in, and we know this manifesto that we're seeing now is something that was spread all over the White House and was being funneled into Trump by Rudy Giuliani and Lynn Wood when he was still allowed in the building and stuff, next level crazy stuff. The last, the acting secretary, Chris Miller, the guy he put in, acting Secretary of Defense. I don't know if you guys have seen, they posted it at defense.gov, the transcript of his outgoing press gaggle, where he just met with everybody, give him a last little rundown, and then out, you know, and then the new administration's really going to come in and take stuff over, and really the day-to-day is being run, whatever. This is, somebody asked him about the Pentagon's acquisition process and some normal stuff, like literally reporters just trying to do. I cover the Defense Department. This is my beat. Right. I have questions about F-35 and the F-16 and financing, da, da, da. His final question, he goes, I cannot wait to leave this job, believe me. But part of me is like, I would have loved to have gotten involved in the acquisition process and try. And, you know, talk about a wicked problem. I wanted to take that one on. F-35 is a case study. Although I got to tell you, yesterday we were talking to some guy, some lieutenant colonel or colonel, said, "What are you flying?" Said, "F-35. I was like, "That's a piece of." And he was like, he laughed and he was like, "No, seriously, tell me about it." And he was like, "An F-16 guy, F-35. He said, "Unbelievable aircraft. That investment for that capability, they were just never supposed to use. Well, we have to deter blah, 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 blah. Are we fifth generation? You know, I think it's hilarious. You know, right now, you know, well, we need to invest in the sixth generation." I'm like, "We've created a monster, but you know that. Thank you." And he just left. That was it. That was the end.
What a statement.
That is the acting pathetic. Secretary of Defense of the largest military times six of all other militaries on Earth combined, giving his final statement as the secretary. And he was the guy that Trump went, you know what? We've only got a few weeks left. Get that guy out. I need the money. I need this guy in there. That was his final statement acting as Secretary of Defense. Blah, 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 blah. It's actually in the transcript.
And Trump has all these acting. He never actually went through the appropriate, you know, processes and procedures.
They wouldn't make it. None of them would make it.
Yeah. You know, part of disinfo is also kind of attacking sensibility and education and all of that. And you see
competence.
Brett, we had a clip yesterday of Congresswoman Bobber, who helped lead some of the terrorists, mm-hmm. gave it like a right. tour allegedly, you know, the day before. And she's giving a speech about inalienable rights. And she goes, the word is unalienable. It's not inalienable. It's unalienable. And it's like, why? Like, it's a major point for her to tell you right. that the word is unalienable. And it's just that utter...
The sky is not blue. The sky is purple.
Right. Yeah,
the
we
sky
must
is
make
purple.
This.
You must we, say we, the sky is purple.
yes. This look, we've drank the Kool-Aid four times. It wasn't poison before. I know he's telling us now, but let's just go ahead and drink it, and then we'll go back to the pineapple farm. That's the last thoughts of about 80% of the people at Jonestown. And Jonestown was created because that was the first time they drank the Kool-Aid, is the lesson of Jonestown. The lesson of Jonestown was they had it a dozen times. They did dry runs again and again and again until it was poison. Because you couldn't get them to do it right away. They knew, like, oh, and they ostracized, actually, look at this, and I drank everyone's, and it was actually fine. And you guys, now we know who the heretics are. They did that all last year amongst themselves. And they're doing it right now, circling the wagons. We have to take a break. You guys mind staying with one more block with us? That'd be awesome. Excellent. Cool. We're going to stick around a little bit with the Midas Touch guys. It's the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide on WCPT Radio, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
I'm Dick Kay from Back on the Beat, and here is the Mega Worldwide Radio Program with Hal Sparks.
Thanks, guys. Don't forget, Dick Kay follows us right after this for local Chicago politics. You really can't do better. He'll round it all up for you. Mm-hmm. We're continuing with the Midas Touch, guys. I have taken deep dives into the world of, you know, I live Jordy's life almost every day in many ways, because on my daily stream, what I do is I pick the whole thing, like Rudy Giuliani's Common Sense show that he puts out, or Trump's rallies when he was having them, or his statements. And I pride myself on the fact that on my show, I don't cut clips. I do the whole thing. I do, like, from top to bottom, I interrupt it, I make jokes, I do, you know, I interject with facts, but then no one can say, they cut this out of context, they take this out of da-da-da, they mix these two. And I think you guys have a tighter solution for that. I'm the long form to the short form version of what you're doing, which is to juxtapose the lie right next to it. And that, I think, helps with the deprogramming almost more than anything else, because there are several times where I've done my show and I'm like, Trump, all during the last election and all through his presidency, but specifically during the last, all the rallies, was saying that he got VA choice passed, that was one of his big claims to fame. VA choice was his and nobody could get it. Not only did he do it, but everybody tried and nobody could for 40 years. Never mind the fact that Obama passed VA Choice Accountability and Access Act in 2014. It was actually Hal Rogers, a local representative from Kentucky, who drafted the bill. It was bipartisan. It got through. It wasn't even difficult. Like, it was one of the few things where everybody was like, yeah, let's fix it. That's fine. And Trump himself couldn't even allow the fact that it was – he could have literally come out, if he had a brain – and said, the VA Choice Act was put through by a Republican from Kentucky, like Mitch McConnell, my dear friend from, Kentucky. And they screwed it up. I added some stuff and we fixed it. It was a mess. Without me coming in there, you guys don't know. He could have actually done it. But his need for the ego of it had to be impossible. And I had to walk on water to do it. Right. Was both his downfall in that particular one, because I found that I could at least, and it drove the trolls that I have crazy. I'm like, you can think whatever you want about me. You can think I'm paid off by China, that I'm a secret Marxist, that I'm a cross dresser because my hair's long. You can make up
all your Soros film checks come in this week.
They did not. He's using cards, I heard now, okay. But I got my
card.
I got my Soros phone. I got my right. So, but I could put that one up, and I could go, look, you can think whatever you want about me, but you can now no longer pretend you don't know that Obama signed the Choice Availability and Access Act, Accountability and Access Act of 2014. You know this now. This is just reality. Like, go look it up. It's on the VA's website. It's been there since 2014. And do you have people, like, when you show a clip with somebody like clearly lying and here's clearly them contradicting themselves or clearly this thing, do you ever have somebody go like, oh, well, all right, you guys got me on that one? Is there anybody who has the guts to say it?
I'd say that's pretty rare.
I'm curious.
I think it's just, I think the fact is that, like we were speaking about earlier, these are people who have been just taking in an endless amount of disinformation from Newsmax and right. Parler and all these things. And so they're preconditioned to think that anything they're seeing from anybody else is the fake news. It's somehow out of context. It's somehow edited, mm-hmm. no matter how clear it is. And when you listen to those platforms, you understand how people could believe those things. I mean, you mentioned before that you spend time listening to Rudy Giuliani's the show, which bless you for that. But I listened to some of his statements that he made recently. And he was like, the president said, let's march peacefully to the Capitol right. and have a peaceful da-da-da. It's like, okay, if you're going to take like one line out of everything he said. By the way, you said, let's have trial by combat.
Who's, right. What attorney and also, says,
let's have trial by combat.
And he didn't say peaceful until after it had happened.
Yeah.
He didn't say, they're interjecting. They'll recreate reality. They can rewrite. They can fake news their way through it. But if anybody else, and if you call them on it, you're fake news. It's kind of an amazing, snake eating its own tail.
Totally. And how, adding to Brett, mm-hmm. though, I don't think it's one video that someone sees a 60-second video and goes, you know what? I was voting this way, and now I'm voting. But it's repetition, the same way disinformation uses repetition, when we could show you 500 videos that have examples, we can then get you to have that conversation. It's the same tactic, but with truth that disinfo uses, but we use it for truth. And literally from the hashtags to the ground efforts that we do, to the videos that we do, to the billboards that we do, it's all targeted to, we know we're not going to get you in one, but by 50, you're probably saying, okay, wait a minute. Like, let me
right. reflect. It can't be this much.
And then we're arming family members. And this is what the feedback we've gotten, for them to use the videos and sit down with a family member and say, have you seen this? Have you seen that? And that was what was most effective. And we had thousands, if not tens of thousands of people saying, I showed this to my cousin and it brought him on a path here. I brought this to my uncle. It's always an uncle. I brought this to my uncle and he did it or an aunt. So that's, I think, our strategy. And there has been some success.
You know, I'm gonna ask you in a second about your plans going forward in this last segment we have with you. Going into 2022, knowing that some of these other people, the Josh Hawleys of the world, the Ted Cruz of the world, are hoping to scoop up MAGA and carry it with them and have it be their delivery system. I was doing a travel show in China before all this stuff happened, and when I came back from China the last time, I was like, there's this disease that's spreading there, and we need to get ready. I was saying this on my radio show in 2019, and wash your hands. If you're sick, stay home. It's bad. And the idea that they didn't know is ridiculous, because I knew and I was over there. But that's another side story. In China, they have a lost generation of men called the evil uncle. And they have evil uncles because these are the people that during the Cultural Revolution were kind of left out in the cold. And they make their money effectively spy hunting. They view every foreigner as a potential spy. So they basically, if they can catch one, they get $80,000 US effectively in money or whatever. So they just, anytime you're filming or walking around with your camera, if you're an American tourist especially, and they think, you know, Australians fake, you know, their accent and they're really Americans, they just loiter around you and tell you you can't film things. And then they call the cops on you, and then the cops show up, and then they leave you alone because these guys are always turning you in. But that's the only option they have. And it's very much – there is such a parallel between those guys and the weird QAnon uncle patriot guy over here, this lost generation that feels like they've got no job, no purpose. They've got nowhere to go. I know the Ted Cruzes and the Josh Hawleys are looking to latch onto those people and drag them by the nose. So what do we do going into 2022 – you know, in these House races and the like, which is a much broader effect, getting people to vote, that's obviously much more crucial. People are starting to recognize that. The attacks on voting that are going to come. Are you guys gearing up knowing, okay, we've got to have a strategy for the next 2 years leading up to that as well?
I'd say we're not only gearing up, we're already getting started with it. We think mm-hmm. one of the mistakes of Democrats in the past has been not quite waiting to campaign for your values and against candidates until the actual election cycle is imminent. And we're right. looking down the barrel right now of 2022 with a Republican Party that, let's face it, at this point is just the party that openly supports fascism and authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. And we want to do everything we can now to make sure that everybody sees what's happening, that we think these are anti-American acts. And if Josh Hawley or Ted Cruz or Tommy Tuberville or any of these people think that following Trump, who is a loser with a 29% approval rating, who may be in prison soon, is the key to their political future, I want them to know that they're mistaken. And I think mm-hmm. we've also seen success in recent days and weeks with the targeting of businesses and mm-hmm. corporations who support these politicians. And, you know, what does your corporation stand for? Do you stand right. for American values and innovation? Or do you stand for literal domestic terrorists who tried to attack the United States of America and overthrow the government? This isn't like, yeah, you know, they're conservatives, so you shouldn't support them. Like, mm-mm. you know, we disagree on taxes. You know, it's like, this isn't that. We are
yeah.
far beyond that. This
yeah. and how we have to deliver. We have to deliver, though. We can't yes. ignore that base. We can't yes. be the Democratic Party, progressives, liberals, whatever. Can't be arrogant. You know, we have to realize that we can have some huge, ambitious platforms. But at the end of the day, we have to speak face to face to that uncle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have to look at them and have these conversations and recognize, you know, that they are feeling pain, that they do feel like they're a lost generation. But what mm-hmm. we have to explain is that raising the minimum wage, making education affordable for your children, is a way that your family
and yourself
is better. Yeah. And when the Republicans put up the Lefflers and Purdue's, these billionaires who engage in insider trading, who just want to, you know, hold, you know, do the bidding of Wall Street, like, we're not that party. We're actually the party yeah. for the working class. And we need to reinforce that message and deliver.
I agree. Yeah. No, we can't be the party that says we see the humanity in people who are disenfranchised or, you know, society puts to the side, and then not see the humanity of the person standing next to us because we politically disagree with them. That's the right. That's the hard part. It's easy to, you know, it's easy to cry, you know, at one of the ASPCA ads, you know, the poor weeping dog, you know, that you feel sorry right. for is, you know, I'm not impressed by how you treat that animal necessarily. It's, you know, how it's the tough one. Yeah.
I think the important thing too, that Ben was saying is that when we speak to those people, it doesn't involve compromising our values. Mm-hmm. It is telling them why
our values
are actually helpful for them. It's communicating.
Yes.
Like we're not trying to, and we should never compromise our beliefs for how to make America better with, you know, their mm-hmm. kind of current demands for what they think about America. We should really try to explain to people why this is the path going forward that's best for them and best for their mm-hmm. family.
Right, exactly. And we've got a couple seconds left, so the last word goes to Jordy, just because he gets put in, you know, nobody puts baby in a corner.
They always I'm just saying. I'm going to say is Midas Touch is here now. We're going to be here well into the future. We're always going to be here to combat disinformation and uphold the truth.
That's great. See, he knows what he's doing. He can bring it. Just brings it home. That's right.
He's the marketing guy.
He's the guy with the heavy bat.
I'm smart. That's right. I can handle things.
That's right. Thank you, guys. MidasTouch.com and, of course, at MidasTouch on Twitter. Thank you guys for the work that you do, and thanks for joining us on the show today. I really appreciate it. Keep it up. And if I can, you know, if you ever get to the point where you, like, need somebody to host a little mini documentary, I'm your dude. Oh, yeah. That. See what I'm saying? We'll do it. I'm for it. Okay. We got to take a break. We'll be back right after this. It's the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide.
Welcome back to the Hal Sparks Radio Program, Mega Worldwide. Now time for the happy ending. Yay!
It certainly is. And Theo from our chat room is actually on the phone with us. That's right, we still have the ability to take calls, even in this shortened final segment. Theo, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
There you are. Woo! It's EO. I thought there was another person from the chat or whatever. It's EO. That's okay. So EO, go ahead. Yeah. What's happening, brother?
Well, first off, the issue is a slight correction on what you said about Toby Keith. He's not receiving the National Medal of Freedom. He's receiving the National Medal of the Arts.
Oh. Well, again, the party that cuts arts programs faster than anyone else, the party that argued against funding the Kennedy senator and the Smithsonian in the budget where they argued to regularly fund it and then just went out and pretended they didn't. He gets it in an Oval Office full of cardboard boxes. I would argue that. And why Toby Keith and not? I mean, I get like not nothing on Toby Keith for his place in country music. But is it just, and again, it's just, if you liked me, you get an award. But okay, and then the other part of the happy ending, still, there we go.
To be fair, Ricky Skaggs is also going to get the medal as well, so don't feel too bad.
Well, Ricky Skaggs passed away.
No, he didn't. He's still kicking.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, he's still alive right now. He had a bypass surgery last summer, but that's all I heard. But anyway, to get to my happy ending before we end the show, after filing up some paperwork and
I'm mixing him up with somebody else who just passed away in the bluegrass area. Sorry, that was my bad. You're right. Ricky is still around. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
He tweeted recently about another person who passed. That's what I was thinking. Beg your pardon. I don't really go into the deep bluegrass part of my brain very often unless I'm home visiting my dad. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
This is a bit of a personal happy ending. So after filing some paperwork and after making a decision, I have decided I'm going back to school. I'm going to be going back to pursue my accounting degree.
There Woo-hoo! You go. That's what's up. That, and again, this is exactly what we were just talking about with the Midas Touch guys, that people need to find their way back to either, you know, dreams, hopes or plans that they had for themselves and gather them, you know. And congratulations, EO. Big round of applause. And that ultimately is where we all should be kind of. I've said that during, you know, I don't even want to call it lockdown, during, you know, the current unpleasantness. One of the best things we can do is woodshed, you know, the stuff that you can't do because you can't go out, you can't do other things, using this time to better yourself in whatever, learning a foreign language, you know, reigniting your study of some topic. Even if you can't go back to college, like EO's talking about right away yourself, one of the things you can do is start, you know, reading up on the topic. There's nothing stopping you from reading all the textbooks before you start school. There isn't. There just
Which
isn't.
Is what I'm planning to do.
And it's great.
I've got some accounting textbooks on my Kindle, so.
There you go.
So it worked.
That's awesome. I'm very excited for you, brother. That's awesome. And Jim in our chat room saying EO's cashing in those big federal education grants. The ones that are coming, maybe. But I do really think, like, this makes a difference in your life. And, you know, we've left a anti-education presidency. There, you know, and it, you know what I mean? There was this idea about Trump, and EO, congratulations. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it, brother. Good to see you as always in the chat. I'm going to figure out who I was talking about who passed. It wasn't Ricky. It's bugging me now. But over the course of the last, you know, 4 years, there's been this kind of inherent genetic superiority or talent idea that Trump himself has pushed. And a lot of, you know, what the, you know, the Proud Boys and that their ilk of white supremacists believe, that you're born with this inherent greatness, that you have within you this, it's just there, man. Just get out of the way and it unfolds. You know what I mean? It's the inherent racism that bothered me in the modification of the Force in the Star Wars universe, where it became, you know, midichlorians in your blood, which made it royalty, which made it a genetically passed on family thing, as opposed to something anyone can train themselves up, like almost the Kung Fu characters of old, where you could could hop clouds if you trained hard enough, was the idea. It wasn't because you were born that way. No one was born magical. And there's been this born magic idea because no one can, there is no other explanation for Trump's success. And he was born rich. That's the magic he was born with. That is essentially it. If Trump wasn't born rich, he would have lost his job as a bus driver for being the most rotten person on the shift. You know, he would have never been anyone of merit if he wasn't born of merit. And again, that's not necessarily to say that, you know, people who are born wealthy or whatever, that their privilege isn't based somewhat on the hard work of their relatives. One of the things that comes with it is if your parents work very hard and provide you with an education, the privilege is passed on by not being taken by your parents. You know what I mean? If your parents struggled and did all this stuff, you may have been privileged to have not had to struggle like they did, but that's what you want for your kids. That's what everybody wants for their kids. It's the, you know, redlining, pushing people back, you know, keeping them from being able to do that, that Trump benefited from as well. You understand? Yep. It's not just that his dad worked hard and was able to send his kids to good schools so they did better and rubbed elbows with people. It was because he and his dad stopped black people from living in better neighborhoods where they could have gone to better schools, and they benefited from not facing that competition, right, in life. If you're not competing against everybody, then you can't say you won. That's my rule.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Of greatness anyways. So
exactly.
And moving out of this era of this idea of inborn talent or gifts, which Trump loves and really lines up with good genes. He says it about Scalia's kid. That's good genes. He said, you know, that all that talk is so grotesque and speaks to a certain level of Darwinism that is the exact opposite of the Christianity they supposedly adore, right?
Right.
Because these are opposite tracks. And even when people go, oh, my God, you're so blessed. I get that a lot because I'm funny. And I'll get that on a television show like a local news. And the very religious, you know, lady host will sometimes go, oh, you're so blessed. No, I'm not. I'm blessed to have lived in this country like everybody else. I'm blessed to have been given that thing, that I wasn't starving for scraps of food in Yemen under a strafe bombing campaign between people fighting over a fuel source that is headed for the dustbin of history. I'm lucky in that way, but I'm not compared to her or compared to the other host or whatever. It's because I chose to bring joy for a living. I made that choice, and I've developed it. You don't always stay as funny as you can be, right? You have to work at it. It's a skill. Skills require work, and work involves education and reaffirming the value of education. And I think one of the things that I pray to God we can get out of the last administration and into the Biden-Harris administration that is starkly different is a respect for science and education and genuine personal development based on your capability, what you can do with your life, what you can learn, you know, that it isn't magic. When you see somebody playing piano or playing guitar, it's because they worked really hard at it. And you can have a deep respect for the work they put in, and that gives you the possibility of, if I did that work, I could have that too. It's just a matter if I want to or not. Talent is falling in love with something before everybody else does. That's it. And that's why Johnny Million is an amazing guitar player. I'm just saying. It's true.
I was obsessed.
Yeah, exactly. And it shows, and it's wonderful, and that's, you know, one of the reasons I love you. And I thank you guys for listening. Thanks for joining us today on the show. Thanks to the Midas Touch guys for being with us today. It was amazing. Thanks, EO, and congratulations again. And and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, we will.
Just kidding.